No cat anymore. My cat's gone.
What do you mean your cat's gone?
Echo died.
Oh no.
Yeah, died at 23. God bless him. Yeah, it was a
Wow.
very transition. It was really fast.
What
So,
happened?
I was away on a trip, and when I got back, the girl said, "Oh, he hasn't been eating so great." We were hand feeding him, and Alyssa brought him home. He came out of the carrier, and he was just falling over, and he just went into like an acute renal failure, liver failure. And I was treating him for the first 48 hours, and then I palpated him, and he had a huge mass all of a sudden in his abdomen, which was probably a bleed because he'd become anemic. So he probably had hemangiosarcoma or something, but because the mass wasn't there 4 days earlier. So it was probably a hematoma of something. And he let me know he was ready to transition. And I said, "Buddy, we have that deal." So,
Wow.
yeah.
2023, that's a long time. That's what cats are, what,
Yeah.
set like 7 years in humans, 9 years in humans? What is the cat to human ratio?
Yeah, they say there's 7 years to every pet, and there's a lot of variation in there, but they certainly have a shorter lifespan, but they really should live into their 30s. So
To
we're
30s,
killing
you think?
ourselves. Oh, yeah. I mean, we're supposed to live to 120 vibrantly. And so here we are, we're dying early at 120, and we're not making it to 120. We're barely making it into our 70s with all kinds of decrepit going on.
Right.
And so our animals, the same thing. They're dying at a very young, early age, which, what's sad is that we are conditioned to accept aging as a problem, as an expected deterioration of the body. And so when we get older and we start to have things that are achy and breaking down and having issues with ourselves or our pets, it just becomes something that we go, "Okay, well, I'm going to go to the doctor. I'm going to get a pill for that." Instead of, "Why am I aging?" The whole anti-aging thing, it's an interesting concept because I studied with, what is his name? Dr. Stephen Chernysky. And years and years ago, probably going back 30 plus years, he wrote a book called The Metabolic Plan. And what was fascinating in his work is that all these people were talking about what causes aging. He said, "No, I want to study what causes anti-aging." And this was 30, 40 years ago before it was popular. So he went out and actually lived with the Aborigines out in Australia. And he studied what they ate all day long. And then when they got back to camp, he would take his little pan out and his little burner, and he would start to make his meal. And the Aborigines, in his book, he talks about they would gather around him and their eyes would get big. And he said, "Well, what are you watching?" And they would say, "We're waiting for you to explode because you can't possibly put that much food in your body and not explode," because they eat little tiny 300 calorie meals throughout the day as they're doing activity. And they couldn't imagine somebody just eating this big meal at one time. And so in his quest for understanding what helps people live longer and healthier, he studied blue zones and he studied everything that came around what does longevity really look like. And of course, it was reducing inflammation and eating foods that promoted wellness and biological activity, so the right supplements, etc.
Who was this? What was his name?
His name is Stephen Chernysky, Dr. Stephen Chernysky, and I met him
Okay.
through a company that I was involved with, and he wrote a book called The Metabolic Plan. And I still have the book. It is like a little Bible for me. It just filled with wisdom, and it was so simple. Like, that was my first introduction to how do we look at biology and just make it simple. And so that's really cool.
Well, let me introduce you to folks who don't know you. So, this is Dr. Marlene Siegel. She is a very, very good friend of mine. She is on our board of directors at the Holistic Leadership Council. She is a 40-year plus experienced integrative veterinarian, I would say, and many would say, one of, if not the world's leading integrative veterinarian. She integrates the best of all worlds when it comes to diet, lifestyle, and leading edge technology to help all kinds of animals, especially working with, dogs and cats. But she has helped horses and parrots and snakes and frogs, even your frog story of, like, basically helping a frog, like some random frog you found that was like dying and like giving it surgery or something. You could tell that story. That was pretty fascinating. But is the go-to expert when it comes to helping animals thrive. And we've seen an explosion of cancers and other chronic diseases in our dogs and cats in the last 30 plus years that we've never seen before, just like we're seeing in humans, right? We see this explosion of chronic diseases in humans like we've never seen before. Cancer is almost at 50% of humans in the modernized world, when 100 years ago is believed to be less than 1%. 50 years ago, or closer to 70 years ago in the 1950s, it was only about 10% of people being diagnosed with cancer. We're seeing autoimmune diseases and diabetes explode at rates we've never seen before. And it's the same in our pets. And so, Marlene, number one, thanks for coming on the podcast. We're going to dive into this deeply with you about why are we seeing chronic diseases in our pets and animals at rates we've never seen before. What is causing it? What do you believe is causing it? What does the science show it's causing it? And then what can people do about it with diet and lifestyle to help prevent these diseases in their pets, in their furry loved ones? So, welcome to the podcast, and
Thank you.
happy to have you. Happy to have you here.
Well, I'm so excited because this is an opportunity to reach so many, and they don't have to be pet guardians. I'm now making a distinction between a pet owner and a pet parent or a pet guardian. Had a recent introduction to a client who, let's just say, was not a very good fit for me. It was a person who I will now label as a pet owner. Because this gentleman, his philosophy was, well, if I have a pet, I don't want to change anything I'm doing. If it gets sick, if it dies, or if it gets cancer, I'll just get another one. And he didn't want to hear anything about what he was doing in the lifestyle of this animal that may be contributing to this animal's issues. And I just thought that was a very interesting comment when he said, well, I've had dogs for 40 years and, I've just taken them to the vet when they had a problem, and I get a pill and I go home and, it gets better. It comes back. And I commented, well, good for you if you've never had to encounter cancer in all the pets that you've had. And he said, oh, I didn't say that. All my dogs have died of cancer. And I just sat there and I went, seriously, you're not
Wow.
making a link between what you're feeding these animals, the lifestyle that you're providing for them, which is so not natural. And the fact that they're all dying early of cancer. And he was just so closed-minded. He gave me a one-star review. So if you guys go on Google, you'll see his comments. And yes, dear Justin was a wonderful opportunity for me to, one, help really identify who my good clients are, who's my avatar, who are the people that I'm really here to serve. Because it's not everybody. Like, not everybody wants to do what Nathan does. Not everybody wants to live a healthier lifestyle or eat organic or eat species appropriate or work out and exercise. It's not for everybody. And that's okay. We're all here in our journey, on our path, in the right timing for everybody. But I'm here to be able to serve the pet people that are pet parents. They are pet guardians. Their animals are their family member. Those are the people that I want to serve. And these people are very interested in what can they do to help these animals live a longer, healthier life. Because just like we shouldn't be going to the doctor all the time, our pets don't need to be going to the vet all the time. If we're doing the things that support the body in the way the body was designed to be supported, then the body does its own thing. It works. It's very functional. We just happen to live in a time where it's so toxic everywhere around us. We can't get away from it. We can't get away from 5G and the amount of EMF. We're tied to cell phones and computers and routers and then things we can't control outside the house and the amount of hormones, chemicals, and pesticides that are being used in our environment that we have no control over. But the lesson there, or the beauty, is that the one thing we can control is our own behavior. We can control how we perceive the world. We can control how we react to things. We can control what we do within our own personal sphere, and we can make choices that help us to make healthier lifestyle choices for us and our animals and Mother Earth. Because one of the things that you were mentioning in the opening introduction was the rates of chronic disease in our pet family and in our human family. But what we're doing to the wildlife is horrid. Like, there's a 35% reduction of all mammals on this planet. And that was a 42-year retrospective study that was done by the World Wildlife Association. And they went back statistically and measured that it was between, it ended in like 19 or the early 2000. It was a 42-year retrospective study. And they found these drastic numbers of reduction in wildlife, bird population, mammals. So we're not just killing ourselves, we're killing our planet. We're killing the wildlife that's on this planet through the behaviors that we're doing unconsciously. But when we become more conscious through your work and my work, and people start hearing some simple things like, are you using laundry detergents that are safe for the environment and safer for us, that aren't full of xenoestrogens? And they're out there. We just have to make the conscious decision to not go to the store and buy Tide. You know, we have to read the labels and see what is it that we're really getting in our products that are touching our skin, that are going out into the earth after we use them, that are contaminating our water supply. It's a really big deal, but it's not overwhelming. It doesn't have to be overwhelming. We just start with one action, implement that, and then when you're good, then go back and find another action.
Yeah, that's a great point. And you brought up a distinction in guardianship versus ownership that I think is pretty important. I just watched the new film in theaters, the documentary called Christspiracy. And it was really good. And one of the things that they brought up in that film that speaks to this point is this idea of dominion, right? That humans have been given dominion over animals, over the planet. You know, it's in the Bible. The word dominion comes up many times. And that's one of the reasons that people believe, well, I can do what I want to animals. I can eat them. I can kill them. I can enslave them. I can do what I want to animals and to the planet because God has given us dominion. Because the word dominion in our modern day is kind of like ownership. It's mine, right? This is my dominion. I can dominate. I'm a human being. You know, that's my God-given right. But when they talked to a language expert and sat down and went, and this is all in the film, I thought this was really fascinating, and went and looked up the ancient Hebrew word from the Bible that was translated to dominion, the actual original meaning of the word that was in Hebrew, that was in the Bible, actually means stewardship, which is the same as guardian or guardianship. And so stewardship actually means responsibility. It doesn't mean control over. It doesn't mean to dominate. It actually doesn't mean dominion the way we use it today. It means to take care of, to steward, to guardian, to look after. And so when we use that word in that original meaning, in this case with animals and with the planet, it changes everything, right? It's like, oh no, these aren't my animals to control and to dominate and to kill as I please. They're actually, if we believe in that, you know, God-given right of stewardship, of guardianship, then it's actually our responsibility to look after them. And I just thought that distinction was pretty incredible.
Isn't it interesting that I have this Justin guy that comes in and helps me to make that distinction? Literally, I ended that conversation after he gave me a one-star review, and I thought, wow, I'm going to write a blog that helps to distinguish between a pet owner of the olden days and what that meant, and the pet guardian, which now you come and you tell me about that story and about stewardship, and that's the word I usually do use. And I thought, where? That's two signs that I'm being told, yes, you are going to write this blog. So that's just confirmation for me that this is an important topic. And it isn't that what we did in the past was bad or wrong. It's just that we're ascending. We're opening our consciousness. We're becoming more aware. And when you know better, you do better. That's literally my motto. Know better, do better. Right? So I don't want people to feel like the things that they've done have been harmful or hurtful, even if the result was that. Now it's our opportunity to know better through education and empowerment. Knowledge is power. And once we know better, you can't unsee it, you can't unknow it, you can't undo it. You just have to decide, am I going to use this information as an opportunity to behave better, make better choices, be more conscious of what my behavior is causing on Mother Earth and the animals that were around, not just your own pets, but your the ones outside, the birds and the bees and the wild animals. And so it's a whole responsibility. And also, how do we behave with each other? Right. Like, we can be short fused, we can be angry, we can be judgmental, we could be pointing fingers and blaming and shaming, and we could berate people like what this guy did to me. And that's one choice, but we also have the choice on how do we receive it. So for me, I said, wow, I'm going to own that. This is a person who showed up to show me contrast, but what am I going to use that contrast for? And so I'm choosing to use that contrast to A, educate pet parents on, you know, am I a good fit for you? Or, you know, what are you looking for in the health care of your pet? And also in my response, you know, I could have been angry, I could have taken it personal, but I realized that, first of all, this is a person who is extremely ignorant. And
you didn't kick him out.
Obviously,
you didn't kick him out right there and say, get out of my office, get out of here.
It was, thank God it was on the phone, the conversation. But, you know, when he came to pick up his dog, he was even abusive to my daughter, who was checking him out. And she was so gracious as a 30-year-old to say, if I did anything to offend you, I'm apologizing. And he texts back and says, it's not acceptable. I'm not going to accept your apology. It's like,
yeah,
okay, dude.
Just, those those people are just like, it's like, I'm
she
sorry.
She didn't do anything wrong, right? Yeah, she didn't even do anything wrong. She took the higher road to just to say, you know, she's realizing that he's angry, and whatever he was going through, he was taking it out on us. And so I just offered compassion back. That doesn't mean that you have to let people abuse you and harm you. I'm not implying that, but I am saying that it's our choice on how we receive that. So my self-esteem and my belief systems are strong enough that if he has a different opinion, I can say, it's okay. You know, you're entitled to your opinion. I'm entitled to mine. We don't have to agree, but we don't have to be harmful, hurtful,
right,
and try to put the other person as wrong. I'm just saying, you have your belief based on your experiences. God bless you. Go do it. If it works for you, great. Obviously, it wasn't, because all his animals died of cancer, but but I don't have to make him feel bad or be bad. I don't have to make him wrong. I can just allow myself the space to be who I am, knowing that I'm not harming anybody. I'm doing the best that I can with the information that I have. You know, 10 years from now, my information may shift, and I'm going to be open to that, because I am always evolving. I'm always growing. I'm always learning. I'm always kind of what animals do. You know, they sense what's going on around them and they adjust. Our cells do that. They take communication from what we're experiencing, the neurochemicals that we produce when we're happy and in gratitude versus we're anger, shame, hurtful, bitter. We produce different neurochemicals. So we're basically communicating to our cells and our DNA and our microbiome what is happening in the outside lunar world. And so if we're telling them all the time that there's bad things happening, we're in danger, well, then our cells are going to go into cell danger response mode. They're going to close down. They're going to stay in a high sympathetic safe mode, hoping that whatever that danger out there is going to go away and we can go back to thriving.
Yeah.
But during that period of time where we're telling ourselves it's a bad world out there, they're hunkering down in the bunker, just trying to wait for the storm to pass. Do we want to stay there? Or do we want to shift into a state of gratitude and joy and love and compassion, where it is a totally different vibrational state and the only state that we stay parasympathetic and are able to heal and repair and regenerate?
100%. So I want to ask you about the current average lifespan of our cats and dogs versus their ideal, let's say, natural health lifespan. If they were healthy, lived a long, healthy life, what is that potential for cats and dogs? How long should they be living versus how long are they currently living in our modern day?
I love that question, Nathan, and thank you for bringing it up. Our pets have statistically been shown to be able to live into their 30s, mid to late 30s, with vibrance. And that, when I said it to Steve, what Justin, he just blew up. That's not true. Okay, dude, we're done with our conversation. But no, they should be living into their 30s with health and vibrance. Pets currently are living statistically 7 years shorter than they did 20 years ago. Now we're going backwards with all the modern medicine, with all the advancements, with all the things that we know. Why is it that the statistics show that our pets are living 7 years shorter than they did 20 years ago? 20 years ago, it was common to see labs and golden retrievers and even small breed dogs that were living into their late teens, early 20s. And now it's rare. Most of these animals aren't living past 10. And that's because they're coming down with these chronic degenerative diseases. But it's also linked to the level of increase in toxins in the environment. So the body has six organs of elimination. We were literally, and the dogs and cats do as well, and we were designed to be able to withstand stressors and toxins and be able to transmute some of these negative things, make them harmless, and send them out the body. I mean, the liver does three phases of detoxification. It's amazing what the body can do, but it was never designed to withstand the level, the burden of toxicity that we're exposed to today. So it's everywhere you turn. It's all the foods that are processed and full of hormones, chemicals, and GMOs and pesticides and devoid of enzymes. It's just dead food. It's Franken food that we're feeding. And then the water, over 85,000 toxins in tap water. And then it's the air quality that we're dealing with. And it's the EMF. It's the mold. I live in Florida, so we have a lot of mold around here. And then it's the ants in our brain, you know, these automatic negative thoughts that are creating the neurochemicals that we talked about. And then everything that's touching our skin, the products that we're using from women's makeup to shampoos and conditioners that we unconsciously are washing our babies in, not realizing that we're disrupting their entire endocrine system. Like we're making them susceptible to diseases. And of course, we're doing that to our pets as well. So we are inundating our body in such a way, and then we've cut off the body's mechanisms for repair. So we don't have hormetic stressors per se in our environment. A hormetic stressor is a biological stress that is put on the body in order for the body to respond and be able to improve the body's ability to endure. So one hormetic stressor is extreme temperatures. Our ancestors and our pets' ancestors, they didn't live in a house where they could turn the heater on or turn the air conditioner on. They were subject to whatever the external environmental temperature was. And if that ambient temperature was absolutely freezing, they got really, really cold. Not everybody survived in that. But those that they did were able to have adaptive things happen in their body. They made more antioxidants, whatever, and they were able to endure. And then the next season, they were better adapted for that environment. And so we don't see that anymore because we have such a controlled environment. Another one is activity. So high intensity activity is a hormetic stressor. And think about what our ancestors had to do. They had to run away from the saber-toothed tiger or from the neighboring tribe that was trying to kill them, or they had to fight back, or they had these high intensity bouts of exercise. Our pets, their ancestors had to hunt down their food. So that meant that if they were hungry, they had to go chase it down, wrestle with it, kill it, and eat it quickly before that another predator came to eat them. So we don't have that anymore. Dogs and cats, they walk over to their bowl, which sadly for most pet parents don't know better, but they leave food in the bowl all day long. So they leave this Franken food for the animal to graze on all day long. And that's a bad thing. And then the other one is the whole idea of just calories all the time. Like if you look at the way wild animals eat, they eat at dawn and they eat at dusk. They don't eat all day long. And so they have these long periods of fasting, and now
Well,
people are starting
they
to catch
eat when
up.
they can. I mean, if it's a carnivore, a wild carnivore or a wild omnivore or scavenger, they eat when they find food, right? Like
Which
it's
is
not
not
they don't have
every
meal time. It's not a meal
normal.
time. It's like, oh, we found food today. We might not eat for 3 days, you know?
Yeah, so they stuff themselves when food is available, absolutely. And but their motivation to hunt is going to be their hunger drive, and then they go back and they digest and they rest and they let the metabolism and all the processes that have to go on to break that food down, absorb it, assimilate it, and then excrete whatever is wasteful. But in our modern society, we're giving these animals food all the time, which is metabolically a bad thing to do. They never go into a state of autophagy. And autophagy is where we literally are eating our dead and dying cells that are wearing out, because we make billions of new cells every day to replace the ones that are dying. That's the normal process. But when we have all these dead and dying cells that are not being taken care of, they're not getting used up and recycled and then gotten rid of, then you have even more toxins that are developing from your own cellular waste. So autophagy is really important to have the ability, when there's no calories coming in, to use up all these dead and dying cells, take the parts that are still functional and working, recycle that, and then you go back to a state of mTOR, which is the anabolic repairing and building and growing. So we're supposed to be doing this cycling all the time through our natural lifestyle, but we just don't live that natural lifestyle anymore. So we have to create it. We have to learn about it and then go back and recreate it.
Yeah, I like the Buddhist monks I studied with in San Diego for a number of years, where they ate one meal a day. This is very common with Buddhists in Tibet, or I have a doctor friend, Dr. Lodi, in Thailand. And when he goes up to the temples as well, he says they usually eat one meal a day, right? They usually eat lunch, and that's it. They fast the rest of the time. And a lot of the monks that he visits up in Thailand, for example, up in the mountains in the monasteries. He said, I'm doing testing, blood work, and different kinds of work on these monks when I'm up there. And these are 70 and 80-year-old monks they have the bodies of 35-year-olds. They're strong, they're fit, they're healthy, they're lean, they have energy. Like they don't look like a 70 or 80-year-old person. And these are people that eat usually one meal a day, and they're fasting the rest of the time. And that's hard for us to think about in Western society, because we're used to eating all the time. It's also, it is an easy thing to do if you agree that's very healthy for and for our animals, for our pets. Our pets eat what we give them, right? They're not out generally hunting. They're not, I mean, unless you're my dogs and we're out running in the mountains and, they'll catch rabbits and things like that. I don't think I've caught a squirrel yet, but I've seen them catch and eat rabbits. They're pretty good rabbit hunters, actually. It's pretty crazy. And they're part lab, part German Shepherd. But unless your animals are out hunting wild all the time, like they eat what you give them, So that's the one thing that is in our control with our pets is what we feed them and how often we feed them. And I never thought leaving food out all day long for our pet was, our pets was ever a good idea. I think cats, are a little better than dogs about regulating, but I've also seen cats that are just so obese and overweight. I mean, dogs and cats today are so overweight. It's so crazy. I see people walking their dog and like you see them, I'm like, this is a reflection of the diet and the modern lifestyle of modern Americans today. It's crazy.
Yeah, it is. And so, for any pet parent that's out there listening right now, pause this conversation, go get your kibble or canned food, and I'm going to teach you how to calculate the amount of sugar that's in that food. So, you start with 100%, and then you subtract out the protein, you subtract out the fat, the moisture, and about 3 to 5% for ash. They will never put on the label the amount of carbohydrates in that diet, because if people saw it was 40 to 60% sugar, they wouldn't spend the money for that. But that's literally what we're feeding these animals. Dogs are carnivores. Cats are obligate carnivores. They literally have no dietary requirement for carbohydrates. And yet, think about it, you're feeding them 40 to 60% sugar with every bite of every meal of every day. Is there not any common sense why we would start seeing them have such severe problems? And obesity is huge. But we're also a society that's been trained on fast, cheap, and convenient. And that's how we have been duped into the lifestyles that we have today. Fast, cheap, and convenient. So we go to the store, we buy something in a bag, it stays good for 30 days or longer. It can stay on the shelf for years, and we don't think twice about that. But that's not what I would call a species appropriate diet. So people go, well, why would pet companies be allowed to sell that if it's not good for our pets? Well, why is there Wendy's? Why is there McDonald's? It's because we are run by a fast food industry, multi-trillion dollar industry that is also linked to the medical side. So as an example, Mars, the candy bar company, Mars chocolate bars, you know, that Mars, they own a ton of different pet foods. They own at least 12 different brands of over-the-counter pet foods. They also own prescription diets. They own veterinary hospitals, the Banfield. So you have your pet, you are going to a Banfield hospital, you are feeding the foods that they recommend, which are all going to be from Mars. And then you keep coming back because your animal keeps having issues. You know, it's one thing breaks down after another. And then your pet finally gets an issue that is more than what they can take care of. So then they send them to a referral center, which shockingly is owned by Mars. And then that center spends most of their money, $10,000 to $15,000, $20,000 on specialty items, and they're never treating the root cause of the disease. So, quick story. I had a dog that
This
I had to
is
put a stomach port in. No, this is wild.
this
So I
is
had
this
a dog.
is yeah, no, I want to hear your story in a second, but I want to show this to people because I didn't know this. This is the Mars companies. Look at all these brands that they own, many of what you were just talking about. Not only the Mars bars, they own Kind and then gum companies, and you go over, they own Dove, right? You go over, M&Ms, and then here's your cat food, Whiskas, Snickers, Pedigree, there's your dog food, cat food, right? And Skittles, like it's all the toxic, terrible, and then they have a Kind bar, which is still not, if you look at the Kind bars, I think the processed sugar on those is so high. I don't eat them, but I remember seeing them. So it's like every brand they have here is basically, Bounty, Dove, these are filled with all kinds of chemicals. Every single brand that's here for humans and animals is basically filled with sugar, filled with toxins, filled with potential endocrine disruptors, and it's all from the same company. That's crazy.
So they own Banfield, and then they also own Blue Pearl, which are the referral centers across the United States.
Jeez.
How amazing is that? If I wanted to build a business model where I could keep all the business funneling all the way to the end of that pet's life, they've done a wonderful job doing it. Not a good job in the sense of the animal's health, but they've done a great business model.
Yeah,
And we
great
have
business
to
model
stop.
of creating, creating sick
Wealth and
food
income.
that makes people and animals sick, that keeps them sick, that keeps them coming back for more, and keeps them going long enough just to keep getting sick and keep buying their products. I mean,
Until they run to the point where they say, I'm sorry, there's nothing more that can be done.
that's
And then
insane.
they recommend euthanasia. Now, fortunately, my office is relatively near to a Blue Pearl, and a lot of the technicians and some of the doctors will slip these people my phone number and they'll call me. And I don't save everything, but I always am able to add quality of life to these animals. But I have dozens and dozens of cases where they were told there's nothing more that can be done, and these animals live years longer with quality of life, great life expectations, and they were told there was nothing else. So this is a company that doesn't really focus on anything healthy. They don't do ozone, they don't do hyperbaric oxygen, they don't do anything to actually diagnose the root cause of the problem. So if it's okay with you, I'd like to kind of unless you have another question, I'd like to just mention for people what really causes dis-ease.
Yeah,
And I'm
you had a
making a
case before I interrupted you. You had a story you wanted to share if you want to share that first.
Thank you for reminding me. So, this one patient of mine was a kidney failure dog, and we needed to put a stomach tube in so the dog could be fed. And so I take the dog over to the hospital, the internist puts the stomach tube in, and I said, "So, what are your recommendations for how to feed this animal? Because now it's going through a stomach tube, a smaller port, you have to take a little more care." And he brings out this can, and I look at the can, it's like equivalent to the human Ensure, and the first ingredient is high fructose corn syrup. Now, I am trusting that anybody is listening to this podcast knows that high fructose corn syrup is the unhealthiest type of sugar ever, ever, ever. And here they are, a referral hospital that are treating, doing chemotherapy, radiation on cancer patients, charging $10,000 and up. And then when they send that pet home for nutrition, because they're not eating, high fructose corn syrup ingredient. And I looked at him and I went, "Are you kidding me? High fructose corn syrup?" And he did this. He shrugged his shoulders and just went, "Yeah." Didn't apologize, didn't act like he thought there was anything wrong with that. That's what he's being told to do because Mars, that's their motto. So,
Well, and you have these buzz, you have these buzzwords today too that veterinarians are piggybacking on, as well as conventional doctors, conventional medical doctors as well. But another example of that is here in Jacksonville. I was looking for an integrative veterinarian or holistic veterinarian, and they had it advertised on their website. They were using terms like holistic and integrative. And so I went in and took my dogs in and met with them. And the first thing I do when I'm in a place like that is I go and look at all the products they're selling on their shelves. Be like, okay, if these guys are health-minded, they should be selling some really clean stuff. All their shelves, from treats to food to you name it, was all the processed kibble crap with processed ingredients, hot, sugar added in, all the crap that when I've learned from you over the years, like you do not give that to your animals. And that's all they were selling. So that was red flag number one. Red flag number two was when I was talking to them about different kinds of medications and things like that. And I was talking to her and I was like, well, what do you use for, flea treatment for your dogs? And I was talking to the veterinarian there, and fleas and ticks are a big deal here in Florida. And so it's like I'm trying to do everything naturally I can for my dogs. I don't want to put poisons on them, but they also kind of suffer with the fleas and the ticks. And so, I'm talking to her and she recommends this, it's a chemical, it's a pretty toxic chemical. And I go, well, aren't you concerned at all about the side effects? And she got all defensive and she was like, no, and people just think what they want to think about it, but it doesn't really matter. And she had this weird rant about it. And I was just like, okay, here, this person clearly is not holistic minded, is not mentioning anything about diet. When I mentioned, and I pulled up the list of known side effects from that drug, and listed like endocrine disruptor and like all kinds of issues. She literally left the room and didn't come back in, sent her assistant in. And then I was like, okay, we're done here. It was just, and but I found out she used the term holistic or integrative because they used one therapy that was an alternative therapy, a CAM therapy that was basically like it was like a red light therapy or something. I'm like, this is why you guys call yourself holistic or integrative. This is insane. But you have to be careful out there because people are piggybacking on these. They use them as buzzwords, where you and I know, this is a lifestyle. This is, you look at every aspect of your own health, you're looking at every aspect of your pet's health.
Absolutely. Well, you teed up the part that I wanted to go into next, and that is to really understand the biology of your pet and where it goes wrong. So I'm going to make it uber simple for everybody. There is the three things I'm going to talk about. There's actually a fourth, but there's three things that cause dis-ease. So keep in mind, there's no disease. That's a word that's made up. Dis-ease is when the body is not in balance. We've done things that cause the body to no longer have the ability to balance itself in a more homeostatic environment because now it can't repair itself. So the three things that cause dis-ease. Number one is a deficiency of essential nutrients. Now, this is so fascinating to me that our bodies are ridiculously equipped with being able to take food sources in carbohydrates, proteins, whatever, fats, and repurpose them. Like we break it down to its molecular individual unit, and then we put it back together again, and we can recreate almost everything that the body needs through that, except for the essential vitamins, minerals, fatty acids, and amino acids. So God designed us to be humbled enough that we need to take care of Mother Earth and the food that we're eating so that we have these essential nutrients. So, number one, a lack of essential nutrients. Well, not a surprise that we know that our food is not being grown in regenerative farming conditions. And so, a lot of the food that is being grown is grown on nutrient-depleted soils. And if those nutrients are depleted in the plant, whatever's eating that plant's going to be nutrient-depleted, and it goes onward. So, our carnivores are the end result of whatever they're eating. So, not a surprise. We do testing on all of our patients, even our young patients. And I'm finding nutrient deficiencies, things like copper, calcium, selenium, zinc, manganese, magnesium. They're nutrient deficient under 1 year of age if they're eating processed foods. And I'm testing for this. So, this is no longer my opinion. I've got data to support this. And when I fix the nutrient deficiency in the next parts that we're going to talk about, their symptoms go away. So remember, a symptom is just the body saying, knock, 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 I'm trying to get your attention, and please pay attention to me. We wouldn't unplug the dash light in our car when it comes on and say, look, my problem's gone in my car. We take the car in and we find out why the light is on. A symptom is simply the light coming on in the body saying, I'm trying to get your attention. And if we address it earlier on, we do a whole lot better than if we wait until it's end stage. So,
Well, and
number one,
if you go to a normal veterinarian, they're basically going to they're not going to usually test for nutritional deficiencies, and
they don't even know.
they're usually going to prescribe a drug to mask a symptom, exactly the
Symptoms are
same
correct.
model that we have for conventional medicine for people.
It's name it, blame it, and then come up with a pharmaceutical solution. But that's
Mask it.
all symptom suppression. If you guys don't take anything else away from this podcast, know that symptom suppression is the worst thing you can do. Now, if you have a situation where you need to suppress a symptom short term, absolutely. But don't stop there. Find out what the root cause of the problem is. We call it bioregulatory medicine. Because you really understand the biology. So, number one is nutrient deficiencies. Number two are toxicities. All right. So, we already talked about the food, the water, the environment, all these toxins that are just inundating and overwhelming the system. And these six organs of elimination can no longer keep up. So, what does it do? It says, okay, well, if I can't get rid of it, I'm going to store it in the fat, or I'm going to store it in a tissue, or I'm going to store it in the fascia, which is all the glue between the cells. So, these are extremely important to understand. So, what do? We test for toxins and we identify at least the major metal toxins, which are very prevalent. And I find on average that all of our pet patients have 4 to 6 heavy metals in toxic levels. They're running around and they're alive, but they're not thriving. And then they're coming down with diseases that are not necessarily directly related. Like I can't say when you have mercury toxicity, you're going to have this symptom. It doesn't always correlate, but we still see cobalt, lead, antimony, mercury. There are so many that are out there that we are oblivious to, and it's in the food, it's in the water. We really have to start becoming more aware. So, we've covered two things that cause disease: deficiency and toxicity. Number three is mitochondrial dysfunction. And it's a big topic within itself, but the mitochondria are the little bacteria that have become part of us. They live inside of our cells, and there's gazillions of them, and they produce energy. So, most people know your mitochondria produce energy, but they also are the signaler of what DNA expression should look like. So they are communicating with the microbiome, who is picking up all those signals that we are creating through neurochemicals that from our feelings, And they're having this discussion that occurs through the fascia. They're transmitting information back and forth through redox signaling, basically like a cell tower that passes the message on and on and on and on until it gets to the end user. It's the same exact system, but it's happening inside our bodies, inside of our cells. And when that communication gets disrupted, something happens where the signal doesn't get back to the main tower because we're in cell danger response mode, or because the toxins have taken over, or because the fascia has gotten sluggish and there's barriers in there, because there's no structured water. The fascia is structured water. All the water in our cells is structured. So when that is unstructured, then the fourth phase of water collapses and a ton of metabolic derangements occur. So, number one, deficiency, toxicity, mitochondrial dysfunction. And then the fourth thing is actually emotions, because for all dis-ease, there are emotions that are trapped and creating another dimension to that illness. So now everybody can go out and diagnose their animal. When they're sick, they're going to have a deficiency and or a toxicity, and usually it's a combination. There's some level of mitochondrial dysfunction and there's an emotional attachment. But if you just took care of the first three, have your pets tested for deficiencies, have them tested for toxicities, and then am I supporting that mitochondria? And there's tons of literature out there on things that we can do to support the mitochondria. Oxygen. We need oxygen. For people, we need to breathe properly. For animals, also, they need to be able to breathe properly, and that's through exercise and not being frozen in fear and not being restricted. I mean, just think about what happens when we're fearful. We hold our breath, we crunch in, we close in, our diaphragm no longer moves properly because you're just locked into this closed down position. And our pets, in training to our energy, when we're going through that, they don't know why it's a stressful environment out there. They don't know what the danger is. They just know my pet parent is in high sympathetic tone. There must be something horrible going on. I'm going to go into entrainment and be highly sympathetic with them because there's something bad about to happen. So, make sense?
Makes perfect sense. I want to take a few minutes and ask you some just quick, like rapid response questions, like 1 second, 5 second answers, and just jot these down
Okay.
for people. And then we can take some time and go into the nuances of some of them afterwards if needed.
Okay.
Everything has nuance, right? But at least for general information for people, I think there's some really important questions people have so far, which is number one, what's the ideal amount of feeding times we should feed our pets? Is it once a day, twice a day, three times a day, five times a day?
So depending on age, because babies, puppies are going to have to eat more frequently. They don't have the ability to store glycogen in their liver. So just like any baby would eat more frequently, they do need to eat every 2 to 3 hours, especially the small breeds. But that's a whole, that's just because of the glycogen storages. Then once they
Until
start
what
reaching
age?
more 6 to 9 months of age, and then large breed dogs, it might be out to a year because they're still growing. But when they've quit growing, they're not really gaining weight anymore. Their physical size is stabilized. So somewhere between 6 months and a year, then they should go down to weaning into either once or twice a day. Twice a day is nice because it gives you the metabolic flexibility, and then when you're eating, they're not begging because they're smelling food. They become conditioned to eating just like we do. So many people, they're hungry because it's breakfast. They're hungry because it's lunch. They're hungry because it's dinner. We shouldn't have to be committed to eating at those times of the day, but I think people could relate to that. Well, the animals get conditioned to eating at regular times as well, and but they are metabolically conditioned to eating at dawn and dusk. That's what their innate intelligence tells them to do, hunt at dawn and dusk.
So
I
that's
like to
what you
see them feed
recommend ideally, like morning
ideally
and
twice a day.
twice a day,
Yeah, at morning,
morning and evening. What's the latest
dawn
in
and
the
dark.
evening?
Dark. So I would say if you're in a time zone where it gets dark at 6 o'clock or 8 o'clock, but somewhere in that zone is a good time for them to eat. It also is a great time to observe their behavior because in many animals, the first sign of illness may actually be that they walk away from the bowl or they don't eat.
They're sick. They're not feeling well. Yeah, I've
Yeah.
seen that.
Yeah. And then
Okay.
you can use the intermittent fasting by skipping one meal once in a while. For cats, do consult somebody who understands this because you don't want to starve a cat, but get cutting down to one day a week, varying it around where they eat one meal, then that actually does give them some metabolic resilience.
Okay, now in terms of quantity, what is the ideal kind of feeding per pound of body weight for a dog or a cat? If you're not gonna leave food out all day long for your animals, right? Because you want them to live healthy and a long life. And we'll get into what types of food in a minute. But if you're gonna feed them, sometime in the morning, sometime in the early evening, what is that prescription per kind of pound of body weight?
Well, that question only really comes up when you're talking about processed foods. So, can we switch the question into what should they be eating first and then come back? Because we can calculate what their metabolic needs are when it comes to eating a raw diet, when they're eating a diet that's based on meat, fat, bone, and organ meat. That one I could answer. But when you're dealing with processed foods, the amount of carbohydrate is going to vary from one product to another. The amount of toxic load is going to vary. And so it changes that animal's metabolism.
Okay, let's come
So
back to that, and I want to get to the ideal diet in a moment.
okay.
Some other rapid fire questions real quick. Exercise, like
So, okay.
what's it?
Let me give you the short answer to your question, though. The short answer is way under what is on the bag. Never feed what's on the
Well,
bag.
so the idea here is that people are going to stop feeding kibble and dried food and processed foods to your animal because you want them to live a long, healthy life. But if you continue doing that, you're saying less amounts than what's recommended on the bag.
Yes. Yeah. What they say on the bag is always exceedingly higher than what they metabolically need. So when I have an obese pet comes in, the parent goes, "Oh, but on the bag it said to feed 4 to 6 cups." Then we can know that it does depend a little bit on their activity level, their age, how many calories they're actually burning. But the easy answer is, if you're going to feed a kibble or canned food, go way under what they are recommending. And then watch the pet's body weight. If they start losing too much weight, you need to come up.
Yeah, if you're seeing three or, two or three or four ribs showing, right? Like that's a bad sign. They're probably getting underweight.
Yeah.
Versus if you
Yeah, we
can
don't want to
kind of see one
feed
of the
that.
right, kind of, you don't want a rib pack, right? You can kind of see
Yeah.
one of the ribs when they're breathing in or something, but they don't have excessive fat and they're not excessively skinny. They're
Yeah,
probably
remember the
underweight.
Kellogg's Pinch an Inch?
No.
Oh, you're too young,
I
Nathan.
don't know about, I mean, I don't think
Kellogg's,
I ever had Kellogg's that much.
they had a big one of their advertisements was, "Can you pinch an inch?" And if you did pinch an inch, then you were overweight and you should eat Kellogg's cereal, and that was going to make you lose weight. But
Oh my God. I stopped
bad
watching
marketing.
TV when I was like 15, so I probably missed those commercials.
Yeah, that was pretty bad.
Okay, so
So
exercise. What it like ideal amount of exercise?
Again, it's going to be somewhat age related and it's going to be condition related. So if you have an older cat or a dog that has osteoarthritis, you're not going to be able to do the same amount of exercise. So there's some discretion that needs to happen, but everybody should exercise every day. And that might look like taking a trotting walk if your pet is in condition to do that. Obviously, you're looking at the temperature outside. You're not going to do this at noon in Florida during the summer. But swimming is a great exercise. I like encouraging people to get their animals into doing agility work so that they're getting some exercise. Walking around the block to go pee and poo, that's not exercise. Walking to the food bowl every day, that's not exercise. We're talking about really getting the heart rate up and using those muscles. I have a lot of people that use a trampoline to get some of the lymphatic movement, so they bounce on the trampoline with the kids and they have the animal bouncing as well. So that's kind of good. But
Putting a dog on a trampoline and bouncing, really? I can't
lightly
imagine.
bouncing. We're not sending them into the sky, but
Yeah,
just so
I'm
that
like,
they're
someone's gonna
good
get hurt
bouncing.
in that scenario.
Yeah. The walls are up around it, but you're just bouncing about that their muscles are contracting because they don't
You're
have
not
a
spiking them up. They're staying on the trampoline, but I see what you're
pretty
saying.
much. They might come off of like an inch or two, but the whole point is to get that kind of rebounding exercise for their lymphatic system. So just like our lymphatic system, theirs doesn't have a pump either. So we need that movement, the muscle contraction. So for animals maybe that can't go out and do high intensity exercise or running, the rebounder is a nice way to get that in there. But obviously with much care and discretion. So I think that answered it. It's
Yeah,
know what your animal's capabilities are and the temperature and et cetera.
so if they're older, obviously walking is probably a great thing, right? If they can't run anymore, walking might be a great thing. But a walking to go pee and poop, you're probably talking about 10 minutes. That's not enough time of walking, right? You're talking like, hey, let's walk 1 mile, 2 miles, 3 miles.
Thank you for yes, when you're walking them to go potty, they're stopping, they're smelling, they're looking around. They're not really walking. We're talking what you just said is walking with intention. You know, for the pet parent who's doing the walking with them, they're pumping their arms or squeezing their butt cheeks, you know, they're trying to get some good deep breathing in, and you're moving along at a nice clip, not running, but just at a nice exercise walk clip. And that would be the same for their pet. We have a lot of people that go biking with their dogs. I wrote a blog on that, and there's some special equipment that you can put on so that the dog doesn't pull you over and they have some swivel room. Obviously, you want a dog that you've trained to do that so they don't see a dog and then take off and then you go flying off your bike. But definitely doing things that help get them out and moving and engaging with some form of exercise that is within the constraints of what their health will allow.
So my dogs are 8 years old. They're brother sister. I run them 5 days a week, 1 mile, minimum 1 mile every time. It's on my bike. I've got a waist belt that attaches to two leashes, and then they pull me. They literally pull me like the whole
Dog,
time. Yeah,
like a
and
sled
like a sled dog.
dog.
And so, but you know. And I'm a bigger guy, and so my weight is a little bit more than their weight. But if I'm not mindful with hands on the brakes and paying attention, and I mean, they'll chase off after a squirrel. I got to grab their leashes, pull them back while I'm still going. They've pulled my dad over, like tore him right off the bike. He's 70, so he was not expecting that. So he takes them one at a time, and he can do it. But both of them, he can't do it. But I've just trained him that way, and I just have to be mindful. But yeah, they'll full out sprint for 1 mile by the time we get back home. And then other days, I just walk them. I'll walk them 1 mile, and then once in a while, we'll go out to the forest, and they'll run the whole time. I get them off the leash, and they'll probably run 2 or 3 miles. And so at least I run them at least 5 days a week. I think just like me, I go to the gym 5 or 6 days a week. 1 or 2 days off a week is a good cadence. I kind of do the same thing with them. I'm like, yeah, they could use, 1 or 2 days a week off because I'm running them. They're sprinting, 1 mile minimum 5 days a week. And that works really good. That works really good for them.
So they have a lot of dog parks now,
Yeah.
and the dog parks are getting very sophisticated. So they're broken up based on size. So you don't have little Chihuahuas in there with Great Danes. And you know, with our dog, Alyssa sent me some video of a D. She has her own Instagram page, by the way, guys. It's called Antics of a D, ADI. Antics of a D. So she sent me a video of her at the dog park recently, and a D's only like 9 months old, so she's still quite a baby, but she's a little bit bigger. And the big dogs intimidate her, and when a whole bunch of dogs come over, they intimidate her. So she'll get on the ground and lay there, and she watches what all the dogs are doing, and then she decides who is it that she's going to go play with. And then she gets up, and they tumble and they run, and they just have so much. She comes home, tongue's hanging out, and she is ready to go to bed. So that's a really good thing if you have a dog that has a great temperament. And the pet parents that go to dog parks, there are a unique breed of pet parents in a very positive way. Like they engage, they have birthday parties for their dogs, and they invite the dog friends over, and they can tell who their dog enjoys hanging out with. They have their best friends, and then there's the BFF, and it's just adorable to watch. They really do have this intelligence of how they pick who they're going to play with.
Okay, so let's talk about diet. What is the ideal diet for dogs? And then what's the ideal diet for cats?
So, ideal diet is going to be the same for a dog or cat because the wolves and the lions and tigers in the wild, they all ate the same thing. It was whatever wild animal that they could catch, kill it, and eat it. We are marketed to believe that there is age differences and there's health challenges differences. And so we have all of these niches which allow a lot more SKUs on the shelf for people to have to choose from. So basically, they all eat a raw diet, and that is not a piece of chicken from Publix that you throw on the ground because the way that meat's handled is not healthy. A raw diet should be a grass-fed, grass finished. And I do have to digress for a moment. Carnivores get vitamin D from their protein only. Carnivores do not get vitamin D from the sun. Herbivores, which are what is being fed and then put into the can or bag, hopefully there's meat in there when you're feeding your dogs. Herbivores only get vitamin D from the sun. So if they have not been fed out on pastures, grass-fed, grass-finished, then they're going to be vitamin D deficient. And so whoever eats them is going to be vitamin D deficient, person or dog, whatever. So it is very important that you distinguish that it's a grass-fed, grass-finished diet. Hopefully, they've only been on pasture. They haven't been fed any grains because all grains are going to be genetically modified in today's modern age. You want the diet to still be in the state of raw. So the moisture content should still be there, which most meat's going to be 70% moisture. And the enzymes are still alive in that food because it hasn't been heated above 105 degrees. Our food, because I do have a raw food company, and our food is made in a USDA inspected facility. So we're using human grade products. They're inspected before they leave for any pathogens. We test for E. coli, salmonella, and listeria. And so these products are very clean and they're handled. It's immediately frozen, flash frozen, so no pathogens grow. It's shipped frozen to the consumer, and then the consumers are instructed to handle it wisely, like you don't leave it sit out on the counter for 4 hours. It's raw meat. Now, going back to what's in it, meat, fat, bone, and organ meat in the right proportions, because that's what the wild animals would have eaten. And in fact, if anybody really wonders what's the right decision to make in any circumstance, look at a model in nature. How does nature do it? And then try to model after that. So, a little short breakaway there. All right, so meat, fat, bone, and organ meat in the diet that we made. The way the labeling companies, the laws that require labeling in the US, in order to call a diet complete and balanced, you have to add vitamins, minerals, and fatty acids. But in order to make it shelf stable, they add synthetic vitamins, minerals, and they add cheap, rancid fatty acids, usually fish oil of some kind. And that becomes another layer of toxicity for these animals because they can't utilize those nutrients. There was a university study done recently, and they tested animals that were eating processed food. 85% were vitamin D deficient, dogs. And I've been doing the metal analysis and the nutrient analysis now for over 5 years. And across the board, our meta-analysis shows that a majority of these animals are deficient in 3 to 5, if not more, essential nutrients. So vitamin D, B12, magnesium, and then all the ones I listed in the beginning of the podcast. So we're sending these animals out with not enough to support them. And why the minerals and vitamins are important is because they are literally the cofactors that run our metabolic pathways. So it's not just, oh, let me eat Flintstones because that's the vitamin we remember. There's really the reason behind it are these are the essential nutrients that my products. I created the essential nutrients that the animals need to have, and I made them in a separate form so that you can dose that animal based on its body weight, based on its age, and based on its metabolic needs. So my pet parents feed the macronutrients separate from the micronutrients, and then they are able to put a diet together in their kitchen. Was that confusing, or did that make sense?
No, it makes sense, and I want to unpack that a little bit and push back on a couple things and have a good conversation around it. One, because you said like cats clearly are carnivores, obligate carnivores, right? Like that's big cats, small cats, whatever. Like that's abs they're I don't think there's any question about that in the veterinarian community. Where there is question about dogs being carnivores, for example, is even in the wild, you know, wolves and coyotes will forage for berries and things like that. They'll even eat some seeds and some plants Now, that's not their main diet. That's not majority of their calories, but they do actually tend to be omnivorous in the wild, especially if they're short on meat. You know, if they haven't killed
Yeah,
something,
well,
they'll eat
that's the
plants. So.
operative. That's the operative. If they're starving, they will try to eat anything. But you also look at that wolf, for example, and their bones are sticking out, they're emaciated. You don't see fat wolves, by the way. So it's not what they would prefer and thrive on, but it's what they can survive on while they're waiting for that ability to kill something.
Okay. So, but when you say they're when carnivores, like when you're saying a dog is carnivore, you're primarily saying what their preference is, right? Like their thriving preference diet is, you know, if you give them fruit, they'll eat fruit. You give them vegetables, they'll eat vegetables. There are actually studies done. I don't know if you've seen these. There's multiple studies done on feeding dogs a completely plant-based diet and extending their lifespan past the average. I'm not saying that's great or the best way to do it. I'm just saying there are published studies on this. There are case studies of it too, where dogs have lived 20 to something like 28 years or something like that, I think, on a completely vegan diet. They have to give them certain supplements, of course. So dogs have been shown to be able to live and in some cases even thrive on a plant-based diet. I'm not saying that's their instinctual natural diet, but there is quite a bit of research that has been, I don't know if you've seen it, that has shown that they
I
can
have.
thrive on a plant-based diet. Now, that's real
Yeah.
food. That's real food though. That's not the kibble dried crap. These studies, they actually gave them real whole plant foods, just like somebody on a whole food plant-based diet would eat. So they're getting all the essential amino acids, they're getting the vitamins and minerals, have a few supplements when they need the supplements. B12 in some cases, vitamin D in some cases, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, but you're talking apples and oranges because if you're talking about what does a wild animal do in the wild, they're going to try to survive. But when you take our pets into our environments, they're watching what we're eating, they're engaged with what we're eating. And so when we give them something, and actually dogs and wolves for a long time, thousands of years, were hanging around the outskirts of man's campsites. And so they would scavenge off of the waste that man produced. So they did become more adapted to dealing with a certain level of carbohydrates far better than cats. Cats have not made that adaptation. But dogs have adapted to be able to endure some level of carbohydrates. As so that we don't call them obligate carnivores. They're actually scavenger carnivores because they will scavenge for things. But in our home environments, that's not their natural way of eating. Their timing is different. Their hunting instincts are different. What we're offering them, what we get them used to eating because of our social interaction with them, I wouldn't call that a natural way for them to eat because they're adapting to this way that we're eating. So when people say, oh, is it okay if I give my animal table food? Well, all depends on what you're eating. You're eating healthy, organic, and it's species appropriate, then giving your animal a carrot or something like that's not going to be the end of the world. But when you make their diet a lot of carbohydrates from peas and carrots and high carbohydrate vegetables, that could be a problem. And then the fruit, it's high in sugar because our fruit today is not the same as the fruit that they ate 200 years ago, which is, our fruit today is bred to be very, very sweet. When I live in a food forest, as you know, and my cherries do not taste like a Bing cherry that you buy from the store. They are fabulous, but they have a tartness and they have bitter and they have sour. And they're what our palates were designed to eat, but that's not what we eat in today's modern world. So your question is very complex, and my short answer was not so short. Ideally, feed them a species appropriate diet. I think that would be the easiest way to start because then you start getting off into the weeds when people are trying to feed a vegan diet. A lot of people have a hard time keeping their diet balanced when they're vegan, let alone trying to balance their dog's diet. So you can get into a lot of problems if you really don't know what you're doing.
Yeah, I think for the population of people, there's about 2 billion vegetarians on the planet and something like 100 million vegans or something like that, who, you know, ethically don't want the raising and killing and slaughtering of innocent animals to feed their pets, right? And so they're finding ways to say, hey, I still want to be a pet parent and have a dog, for example, but I don't want to feed them meat. And so, you know, they're also curious, okay, can I feed my dog plants and can they thrive? And there are interesting, like I said, case studies and published research showing that yes, they can be healthy and thrive, but you have to know what you're doing. You have to have a well-planned diet. Just like you would as a human. You have to have a well-planned diet if you're going to be vegan or plant-based. You have to have a well-planned diet if you're omnivore, right? Like the same amount of people are deficient in vitamin D and other vitamins. Iodine, for example, I think iodine and vitamin D and a couple other vitamins are like, doesn't matter what diet you're on, the standard population are significantly deficient in these
Absolutely.
essential vitamins. So any diet you have to have well planned, right? We're talking whole foods, real foods. We're talking good diversity of food for ethical reasons. If people want to feed their animals, you know, more of a plant-based diet, there are ways to do it. You have to learn how to do it. But what you're saying is, hey, a species appropriate diet, a dog in the wild or a cat in the wild is going to generally be more carnivore. And so if you're going to feed them more of what they would eat in the wild, then that is raw meat, raw organs, raw bones, these kinds of things that they would find when they killed an animal and ate that animal. That's what they're going to be eat. That's more of what you want to feed them, is what you're saying.
Absolutely. So there was a study done by the University of Helsinki, which is a veterinary college. It's one of the few feeding studies that have ever been done in the veterinary world. And they took four populations of animals. They had one group of dogs that were only raw eaters. Then they had one group of dogs that were only kibble eaters. And they did all of these different tests to find out there were different inflammatory benchmarks that they were looking at. And then they took the raw eaters and fed them kibble, and they took the kibble eaters and fed them raw. And then after a period of time, they came back and they measured those same inflammatory markers to see where the animals were. And in every single case, the raw eaters were the lowest on the inflammatory markers, the kibble eaters were the highest. And when they switched the groups to the opposite diet, it went back to the kibble eaters, the inflammatory markers went up, and the raw eaters, the inflammatory markers went down, which is the way you want to go.
It makes
So,
sense. There's so much processed crap in that dried food. I mean, it is so full of chemical additives and fillers and preservatives. I want to make a distinction. When you're saying kibble, generally, you're not just talking about the brand kibble. You're talking about dried dog food in general.
thank you. Yes, I don't even know if there's a brand called kibble, but
Yeah.
we're
What I
talking
remember,
about.
there was one. I don't know if they're still around, but.
All right, yeah, it's that little dry nugget that doesn't have moisture in it, and you can, when you open the bag, all that fat and waxy stuff on the outside, of course, that's all the rancid fats that are in there. So that's probably as bad as you can get for a diet. Now, what the university also showed that if you could feed 51% raw and minimize the amount of kibble, because some pet parents feel like it's too expensive to feed a straight raw diet. If your animal is under 40 pounds, it really is a no-brainer. It's not that expensive. When you get into the large and giant breed dogs, yes, they're going to eat a lot of meat. They can eat up to, you know, 2 to 4, 5 pounds a day, depending on their body weight. However, what people don't calculate in is the broke care that you're paying for. So one veterinary visit for a sick animal could easily run between $400 and over $1,000. If you spent $1,000 trying to diagnose your dog, that's not even maybe treating it for vomiting, diarrhea, cancer, God forbid, whatever, then how much of that raw food could you have used for just that one visit? That would have probably taken you out a couple of months. So again, our society is trained to be a broke care society. In fact, growing up, I would hear, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. Well, seriously, that's creating a society that puts blinders on. I'm not going to look at what I'm doing. And then when it breaks, then all of a sudden, oh my gosh, now I got to face it. Now I got to deal with it. Now, if you're like my client that we fired, Justin, he's just going to go out and get another dog, right? Because it's a commodity to him. He's just
Right.
a pet owner. It's just something that he owns. But if you are the pet parent that really wants to have a life with your pet and help them to live the longest, healthiest life possible, we're likely to outlive them, and we're going to suffer that loss when we say goodbye. But we've had all those years of joy and gratitude and blessings that they bring. And we certainly know that animals in our lives enhance our lives immeasurably, and even we can measure the hormones improvements and the quality of our life that improves when we have a pet, and not one that we're abusing. You know, these are people that love their animals and they treat them as part of the family, and the kids grow up with them, and it's a family, two leggeds and four leggeds. So for those people, when they start looking at what it costs them in broke care, and then I help them to see what it would it really cost to feed them correctly. And Nathan, it's shocking. It's not that bad. So you're playing a balance.
It's more than what people are used to, but when you look at it in the long run, it actually makes sense, especially when you start factoring in medical bills, right? And same thing with our own health. It's like, I was at a point not too long ago, not too many years ago, where it was like, do we buy groceries today or do we save this little bit of money to pay rent in a couple of days? Because we don't really have the option to do both. And we still chose to buy organic. We still chose to eat healthier. We still chose, real foods. We couldn't buy all the packaged stuff and all the more expensive stuff, but it was still a choice we were making even then, because of how important health became to me, my wife, and for our kids, for my daughter at that time who was just born. And it was like, the more you put that importance on your own health and you realize how expensive being sick really is, not just medical bills, which are insane, but how expensive it is to your well-being, how expensive it is to you missing work or missing, if you run a business, how expensive it is to your family, you not being there. Like the expenses go way beyond spending a few extra dollars on foods and things that are cleaner and more organic and healthier foods. So it's the
And
same thing for our
then,
pets. I get it. I get it. I totally get it. Once we prioritize it, it
and then
becomes
we have to add the
essential.
quality of life in there too, because nobody wants to see their pet suffer. Nobody does. Like, at least
Right.
nobody that I've ever worked with. So when you add quality of life and all the other stuff that we just covered, it's really not that expensive. Like, we just have to make choices. I'm like you. I only eat organic. I only use homemade good chemical cleaners, like, essential oils, which are technically a chemical. It's a constituent, but these are things that come from the earth. And
Yeah, it's a
so I
natural
don't.
chemical from the earth. Yeah, exactly. I wanted to say, back on the diet piece, it's funny because people who say, this makes me laugh all the time. People who say that they're on a carnivore diet. I'm on the carnivore diet. I'm on the lion diet. I'm a carnivore, right? Like people could choose whatever diet they want for themselves. That's their choice. I respect that. Like I really don't care at the end of the day. But I have to laugh because if you look at a lion or you look at a carnivore in the wild, and I've watched my own dogs do it in the wild when we're running, right? They kill an animal and they eat the entire animal head to tail. The fur, the bones, the tissues, the hearts, the organs, the brains, the skulls. They literally tear open the intestines, the stomach, and even carnivores are actually plant eaters. Because they're eating the fermented plants in the stomachs and intestines of the herbivores they just ate. So, if someone says they're a carnivore and they're like, all they're eating is beef, I'm like, you're not even close to a carnivore. You're a beef eater, right? Which is like carnivores even eat plants, and carnivore people today don't realize that. They eat the plants from the intestines and a lot more. They're getting fiber from the fur, they're eating the bones, the hooves, they eat everything from the animals that they kill, everything they possibly can from the animal that they kill. And so I'm like, if you're gonna call yourself a carnivore, Go out in the wild and actually eat like a carnivore eats, and then come back and tell us if you're a carnivore. I'd love to see it.
So talked about feeding animals more of a plant-based diet, and one of the distinctions I want to help people understand is that carnivores do not have amylase in their saliva. It is the digestive enzyme that we use to break down carbohydrates. And animals don't chew their food. They tear, gulp, and swallow by design, because if you're a carnivore in the wild and you've killed something, you've made a lot of commotion, you've attracted other predators, and they're either going to eat you because you're distracted and you're eating, or they're going to take and steal your lunch. So the fact that dogs and cats do not have amylase in their saliva and they don't chew their food, if we're going to feed them more of a plant-based, higher carbohydrate diet, we just need to help them with the digestion of that, because otherwise they zap their pancreas as the only organ that they're using to digest with. So at least with the raw diet, the protein is being digested by the enzymes that are still living in that meat that help it. When food rots, what's happening is you have a couple cells that break open, they release the enzymes that self-digest, and then that coats the next layer of cells next to them, and then that starts to break down, and those cells open up, and boom, boom, boom. If you ever watch a piece of fruit, when it's rotting, it starts at usually a center spot, and then it goes out until the whole thing is mush. And so when we're feeding a plant-based diet, if somebody chooses to do that, you just have to add in the enzymes that that animal needs to help break that food down, because they were not the re that's why they ate it out of the intestines of the animal, because that animal was able to break down the carbohydrates, and what they're now eating is a pre-digested, fermented, rich prebiotic slurry that they're eating from the intestines. It's far different than saying, oh, look, they're out there eating their own grasses and eating their own corn and eating their own blueberries. No, they very minimal part of their diet was eating it straight. They got most of it from the intestines of the animal, the herbivore that they are now eating.
So on that note, there is now I don't know about cats, and I don't know about all dogs, but there was a study. They were looking at male beagles and seeing, because that's been the general understanding is that dogs don't have amylase in the saliva, but they have new technology to test some of these things, just like urine. Actually, we thought was totally sterile. I actually found out just in the last few years they have new technology to determine that urine actually has very tiny amounts of bacteria in it. So it's mostly sterile, except it has some of your own bacteria that's already in your body in it, like tiny amounts. So it's technically not 100% sterile. But there was a study where they're looking at the salivary glands of beagles and found that they do have amylase, in fact. So I don't know if that's all dogs or if that was just this particular study. I don't know if you know about
Yeah,
this.
it's trace amounts. It's not enough production where we would say that they were designed to actually eat a carbohydrate diet, because that food doesn't stay in their mouth long enough to actually mix in. Like when we chew food the way we're supposed to eat, we're supposed to chew our food up so the surface area of the food becomes larger and mixes it with our saliva, which has the amylase in it, and then that begins the carbohydrate digestion in our mouth. But most people don't eat properly. They put a bite of food in their mouth, they chomp chomp 3 times, and then they swallow. So they're not getting that good carbohydrate digestion started in their mouth. And for a lot of people, that begins the whole process of maldigestion,
Right,
malabsorption syndrome as
upset
well.
stomach, all kinds of stuff. Now, it's true. You watch your dog eat, any food, give him a raw piece of meat. It's like one, two quick little bites, swallow it. Now, their digestive tract is so different than humans as well. Their digestive tract is smaller. They have way more acid. That's why they can eat raw bones and their, acid just breaks it right up, right? They don't have to chew. They can just swallow. Their intestinal length is significantly shorter than ours. Their bodies are just made to like gulp, gulp, swallow things down. you know, I look at them, I almost feel bad sometimes. They're so excited to eat, you know. Oh my God, I got this piece of meat or whatever. I got so ready to eat. They're so happy, so excited. And then like they swallow it in like 2 seconds. And I'm like, where was the satisfaction in that? You know, you sit down when I'm hungry and I got a nice big meal in front of me and I'm like, oh, I really, oh, this is gonna taste delicious. I sit there and enjoy it for like 10 minutes or 2 minutes. I'm like, oh, that was good. You know, they're like, gobble, gobble, and it's gone. And it's like their satisfaction lasts like 2 seconds. Well, but that's how they're designed. That's how they're designed.
Yes, it's a great point. They're not eating for the flavors and for the ambiance and for the cuisine. They're eating because they're hungry. So their hunger drive is driving them for satiety.
Yeah,
makes perfect sense. And they don't have the same social implications around eating. They can eat by themselves. In fact, a lot of times they'll chase off their partner so they don't have to share their food. So it's the eating to them is it's survival.
Right.
Like they have to be hungry so that they can pass their gene pool on. Because if you're a carnivore in the wild and you pass up a meal, you do that too many times, you're going to die. You won't have the energy to keep doing your job.
So big takeaways here as we wrap up, fill in anything that I might have missed, but real foods, whole foods, species appropriate diet, get your animals off the dried kibble crap, give them filtered water, get them fresh air and sunshine every day, get them out into nature as often as possible, exercise them, ideally high intensity exercise, some kind of jogging or running or even brisk walking, but you're going to do it, you know, at least, you know, a mile or longer, multiple days a week. Show them love. Don't be like Justin and just use them as whatever he thinks animals are for. Have guardianship, right? Guardianship and being guardians instead of dominators. Anything else?
That was my favorite line right there. Is really bad. We are guardians of this planet. We are guardians of our bodies. We have the responsibility for our children and our family and our friends. Because when you know something and you know somebody's harming themselves or their pet, I don't think it's right to not say something. Now you can say it nicely. You don't have to be judgmental and angry and you don't have to be a jerk about it. But I think it is important that we, by modeling what we do, that we influence those around us. Now, I'm also rounding 70. I think your dad and I are close to the same age. And I live my talk. I walk my talk. You had brought up the veterinarian who they call themselves holistic and they don't even model the diet portion. That is a huge problem in our industry because people don't know how to select the right doctor. And they should do what you did. They have to be educated. The pet parent has to be educated. We have an online program. They are welcome to do that and become empowered to understand how do I really take care of my pet. Then when you go to seek a veterinarian, now you have good questions to ask. And the first question I would ask is, what do you recommend feeding my pets? And if they tell you some kind of a labeled product, a kibble or a canned food that comes with initials on it from a big box company, that's not for you. So go interview somebody else, and until you find the person that understands that they're not just treating one thing, you're treating the whole body. It's bioregulatory medicine means that we're understanding how the body works, and then we're putting together a lifestyle plan that helps support the body. We are not going to be better than God. We're not going to create, we have never been able to create a better model than what is already created for us. So let's be the good steward, let's be the guardian, and let's understand what we have so that we can best support the biology of the body, whether it's ours or our pets. And then last but certainly not least, apply that to how we treat Mother Earth.
Yeah. You know what? I do want to add this really quick because I think it's important. I just remembered, you know, I'm a big proponent of, you know, a whole food plant-based diet for people, you know, whether it's vegan or vegetarian or primarily whole food plant-based. And I tried putting one of my dogs years ago on a vegetarian diet, and whether I didn't know what I was doing with that or not, He clearly hated it. He ate his poop all the time. I couldn't stop him from eating his own poop, which, you know, I knew that was not a good sign then. I didn't understand, like I do now, how that was a terrible thing that was primarily his, you know, due to his diet and digestive issues and things going on. And he just was not a happy dog on that diet. And it was like I was forcing him against what he really wanted. And while I do believe in animal rights and I'm not a proponent of raising animals for slaughtering and killing them and eating them, I'm just personally not. I also do have to look at that experience and look at species appropriate diets and look at animals in the wild like dogs and, you know, lean into the fact that, hey, this may be the diet that they really need. I currently do feed my dogs meat, and because I, in talking with you over the last few years, have come to agree with you that I think that is the ideal diet for them. But at the same time, ethically, it's challenging. Ethically, as a person who is whole food plant-based, who has compassion and care for animals, who chooses not to eat animals, because I believe all animals have souls, and I don't believe it's my right to kill them and eat them. I also look at, okay, if I'm going to choose to have a dog, you know, and I've forced a dog in the past to be vegetarian, and he did not do well on that. Again, that may have been my fault. You know, and the first time I gave my dogs raw meat, the two dogs that you know, Sunny and Mooney, because they were on primarily, in the first few years, they're primarily on like dried dog food and canned dog food and stuff like that. The first time I gave them raw meat, I saw this energy light in their eyes that I'd never seen in any one of our animals ever. It was like the first time they ate it, they were just like, oh my God, what is this? And they salivate and they went crazy. While they didn't really care that much for the food I used to give them, they would just go and kind of eat it nonchalant. Yeah. They fight each other over the raw meat, you know, like, no, that's mine, that's mine. They're like it's, I clearly saw, okay, this is what they really want. And so I'm always torn between like, well, yeah, but I'm still contributing to, you know, raising and killing innocent animals for them to eat. And so it is tough. I mean, I think people in my audience, you know, a percentage of people who are, you know, vegan or who, you know, have compassion for animals and don't want to contribute towards the raising and killing of innocent animals, but then also choosing to have dogs or cats, it's a tough predicament that we're in. I mean, I'm not saying I have the solution or the answer to it. I'm just saying I'm living through that predicament right now and trying to figure it out, you know?
Yeah, you know, when you go into like how the indigenous tribes, you know, the Indians or the Native Americans, how they lived their lives, they did eat meat. They would have a kill, but they honored the soul of that animal. They used every single part of that animal. They killed it as humanely as they could. You know, there was a lot of consciousness and gratitude around how they lived their lives and how they ate. Plants are alive. I talk to my plants, and when I eat them, I give gratitude and thanks. So maybe part of the answer is that we try to live our lives as close as we can to the way we were species appropriate designed to eat, and that we just have gratitude and caring and compassion for every aspect of our life. Like if we are going to eat something, if it's a vegetable or it's an animal, we should be giving gratitude because it's sustaining us, it's giving us nutrition. So maybe that's the answer, is that we just become much more graceful, compassionate, kind, and aware, be present with the things that we do in our life on a daily basis. Be here today and in the now, and right there, that just raises the energy and the consciousness of the world. What a nice way to end our conversation with something so positive as being conscious and aware and in the moment.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I think adding compassion to anything in our lives is gonna be better than not, right? And this would be a conversation for later time. I know we both actually have to wrap up, unfortunately. But I personally don't agree with the idea that We can pray over an animal's soul, and that justifies us eating them, right? Like, and this isn't like to judge anybody. It's just, this is my personal belief, and I don't expect anybody else to have this belief either. But I don't believe I can just, you know, okay, I'm going to pray over your soul and thank you for, you know, letting me eat you, because there's no animal that wants you to kill them. There's no animal that wants you to eat them. If you've ever tried killing an animal by hand, which I have years ago, you know, it's like they absolutely want to live. They absolutely do not want you to kill them. They have emotions. The difference between animals and plants, in my opinion, is I believe animals have a soul similar to humans, maybe not exactly the same, but similar. And plants don't have that conscious soul. Yeah, they feel with when we put, you know, machines up to them, and they have senses, but they don't have consciousness like humans or animals. Animals have consciousness. We know that, right? And they have feelings and emotions. And they, you know, plants are not, when we compare plants to animals, I don't think you know, I personally don't think we can compare them at all. But again, that's not a judgment, and that's a conversation, that's a deeper conversation for another time, because it's an ethical conversation, it's a philosophical conversation, and it's an important one, I think, that millions of people want to have a deeper level today without getting into, I don't like the fighting and the judgment and you're bad and I'm good and blah, blah, blah. It's like, I don't believe in all that crap, but I think it's a conversation worth exploring and having, and philosophizing about, you know? Yeah. But anyway, this has been it's always great, chatting with you, Marlene. You're a wealth of knowledge and information, and, you've given a lot of really good tips and things for people today to take better care of their furry loved ones. If people want to get in touch with you, maybe schedule an appointment to come to your clinic. I know you're near Tampa, Florida, or take your pet parent course, or I know you've got supplements and products that you sell. Like, where's the best place for people to get in touch with you?
Dr. like in doctor, and then my name.com. So drmarlenesiegel.com, and MARLENE, S like in Sam, IE, G like in George, EL. So drmarlenesiegel.com is the hub for everything. Our courses, our online products, my office, consultations. We do consultations online. So there's a plethora of information out there as well. Very active on social media this year. So we put a lot of content out there, and so grateful for you that you have taken the pet world under your wing, pun intended, and helping people to round out their lives for themselves and for their fur babies, or feathered or scaled babies, and Mother Earth.
Hey, my last name is Crane, so taking under my wing makes a lot of sense. All right. That's awesome. Thank you so much. And I'll see you at our retreat next week. I'm looking forward to it.
One day we both make it to Mexico. Woohoo!
Yeah. All right. Take care.
Bye, everybody.